This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
It's happened. We have an arrest. David has been arrested. The 14-year-old girl's remains found in the trunk of a Tesla at a Hollywood tow yard. 7 months later, the man whose name was on that car walked out of a Hollywood Hills home in handcuffs just yesterday, arrested on suspicion of murder. But this didn't come from a grand jury. It didn't come from a criminal complaint. LAPD went straight to a judge and moved on their own, arresting him on suspicion of murder. We don't have charges yet, and the defense of David has been very quick to point that out. The question isn't just what do they have, it's what finally pushed them over the line. And to begin our conversation today, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, as always. And it's Fun Day Friday, and coming to us raw and real and actively in a police chase right now.
Oh my God, that's really good.
Jennifer Coffendaffer is with us on the road. Thank you, Jen, for making the time to be here with us. I know it's been a crazy day for your travels, but always so much appreciated.
That is dedication, Jen.
Thank you. Let's
start with this. So it wasn't the grand jury that issued the bill. It was them going to a judge saying, suspicion of murder. Can we arrest him, judge? Jen, I know this does happen, you know, fairly regularly. It's not super unheard of or anything. But what's the difference here when we have not a grand jury, but the method to get him in cuffs?
Well, that's such a great question. So essentially, you have three ways typically to charge: by indictment, by information, or by criminal complaint. However, you can also charge you can get somebody in custody two other ways. One way is if you see the person who has committed the criminal activity afoot, you can take them in custody and detain them for up to 48 hours and then levy charges. And you can do it this way, and that is go to the judge and get a suspicion of murder backing on this, and they're going to have 48 hours to officially charge him. I would look for a criminal complaint coming after this.
And it goes into all the way into, so 48 hours business hours, which means over the weekend he's going to be sitting in jail likely. Robin, go ahead.
Yeah, so Jen, we were talking beforehand, and when this came in last night, you know, my behavior side starts working, but you have much more experience on the crim side. So what I was curious about, what are your thoughts about what their intent is here? Because everything I'm looking at, again, you know, I'm the stats and averages kind of guy. I'm not seeing a whole lot of blip here when it comes to like an intentional type homicide. We might have had something accidental. We got, you know, young kids. We got stupid stuff going on. Maybe some panic escalation. I was curious about your take on that. And also, do you think they might have brought him in to start applying some pressure to see what kind of leakage he will give?
Well, it's interesting because he is known, he's been under the suspicion of murder now for months. This is 7 months old, and about halfway through, they announced that he was their chief target, if you will, or person they believe, chief suspect. And he ran away to Texas, if you'll recall, and was living, I think, with mama, or at least over in that neck of the woods, transferring his property over in her name, things along this line. So when you look at that, I was asking myself, how was he arrested in LA? And I can tell you that oftentimes this is when a move like this happens. I know personally, I was involved in something like this, where we literally arrested six guys in a restaurant, no complaint, no warrants, no anything. Actually, two got away. We got them a short time later, but we arrested them the same way. Was the prosecutor happy? Absolutely not, because that put them on full drive. But he knew we had the probable cause to arrest them. They were the main people involved in a cell of the Cali cartel, Medellin cartel that we were taken down. So nevertheless, that's when these things happen, is when you get them in pocket. And so I was wondering, why was he there? And was that the fact that he was in LA, was that what tripped the wire to go ahead and have them do this imminently?
Yeah. I guess that's the big question I'm wondering about here is you know, why now? Why not? Was there some sort of urgency that we couldn't wait for a grand jury to indict and the DA to bring the charges directly like that? Or what would be the reason for we're going to go get him right now? Like something seemed to have tipped the scale here and created some sort of sense of urgency. At least that's why I'm reading it as a layperson on the outside. Is that an accurate way of understanding it?
I think it's very accurate. There was a reason. And I think part of it was, again, not that they couldn't extradite him from Texas, but were they concerned about him getting ready to flee more, yeah, you know, internationally or something along those lines, and or just getting out of pocket in the United States, which is not the hardest thing to do. So it seemed to me, I wondered if it was the fact that he was in Los Angeles in their grasp in their venue.
And also, I mean, I'm an LAPD fan when it comes to their homicide group. I know one of the psychs with them. They're really, really good. So I think that actually is very good for this case.
Let's talk about some of the actual evidence and kind of what got us here. Santa Barbara County, in the middle of the night in spring of 2025, is where they claim, LAPD claims that they had tracking data showing DVD, or David, being out there in a remote desert area for a period of time, for a handful of hours. Kind of an odd spot to stop for really no reason. But I mean, people go out to the desert for all sorts of reasons, you know, none of which maybe involve murder. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, look at the Half of the Eagles music. It was
or you got Heisenberg.
Yeah, or Heisenberg. You're either Don Henley, Heisenberg, or maybe David. But I guess what exactly, and I guess how strong of a piece of evidence is that is a piece of tracking of just the data of he went out to the desert in 2025, middle of the night. Yeah, odd, I guess, kind of. But then, you know, he's a young man and kids go out for drives and do weird shit all the time. And it doesn't necessarily mean something. There's a dead person connected to him. Makes it a little weirder. But just on its own, is it anything? Or are they reading too much or too little into that?
Well, the problem is that's not all they have, right?
Yeah.
It's not just that he went
it's
to...
It's one piece. This, yeah, it's one piece of
it's
many.
It's one piece. But the biggest piece is that he has his dismembered girlfriend in the front of his trunk.
Yeah.
That's the biggest problem. And it was parked about a block or so away from his house that he was renting, and that they know they have the person on camera that parked it there, that then the person who parked it there and the rest of them load up in a van literally right after it was parked or in a bus, and they start going on tour. We've got all of that information. Anytime there's a dead person in your car, you're probably going to be looked at or be under suspicion. After that, remember, he got another Tesla, bought a red Tesla, like in February, March-ish. You know, mm-hmm. They believe she was there for a very long time. And I don't necessarily mean in the trunk. I don't know what they did with her in the interim, but at some point she was in the trunk. We know she was severely decomposed. There's no doubt about that. That's been made evident to us. So anyway, of course, and I know we've talked a little bit about this, his writings. I mean, he wrote a song called Celeste. He did the romantic homicide where he's all bloody. He's got handprints on him and put somebody in a trunk. I mean, this guy was just begging to have law enforcement look at him. We have months of people testifying before the grand jury, and I believe a lot of that testimony is going to be incriminatory. And then finally, we have his best buddy that just only a couple of weeks ago turned on him, mm-hmm. and came forth in social media and said basically the gloves are off. And I think that's probably the big piece that's going to be one of the linchpins in this case.
Yeah, no doubt, because when you look at how these things typically play out and you look at what we know so far, the likelihood of this being a solo act is really remote. Other people knew, people were involved, especially at this age, I think. And again, there's always outliers from these things. So I'm be curious also about who else was involved. But again, as we've seen in all these other cases, you know, the more people that know, the more the likelihood is that someone's going to flip at some point and give it up. So I think, as people are even saying in the comment section too, it's like, that's probably what happened here.
Yeah, and And, you know, I 100% agree that more people are involved. We actually, my husband and I did a little video to show how difficult it is
somebody.
I know. But I mean, and I wasn't stiff or anything, just to put me in a bag. Of course, we were trying to show that she was dismembered. But beyond that, how difficult it is even for a bigger man to lift somebody. And David was about her size.
Yeah. People, you know, and I know it's really gross and crass to talk about. People underestimate how difficult it actually is to move a limp body. You know, that's passed. I mean, it's really difficult because there's no grab holds. I mean, it's just, and it's a lot of weight typically. And granted, I don't think she was, but again, it's not an easy thing to do.
I don't understand. I lived on a farm for a very short period of time, and I had a deceased pig that I had to move once. And oh my God, I'm like, I do not understand killers. like just that alone is like, why would anyone serially do this? Like,
well,
this is,
Tony, I think it's a great point to bring up. A little weird, but you know, yeah. Great point in the fact that, you know, when you have a first timer that doesn't have a rep at this is the kind of stupid that happens. You know, and that's where these data points are leading to, you know, first time, inexperienced, experience, plan, not plan. That's how all these things play out, because, you know, until you experience these things for the first time, you're confronted with chaos that you didn't expect, like just like that.
Yeah, I know. You're completely right, because unless you've experienced that, you may think, it's a, you know, that can move that around. Like, yeah, good luck. It's not.
It's not as easy as it looks in the movies.
No, it's not. And then concealing it. That's the other thing. And obviously, we've heard the story of Neil Langston, who's turned on him. You know, there's all that. But David continued, you know, to operate in his world for quite a while after Celeste Rivas Hernandez was missing. There's people that are speculating. There's been reports contrary to the medical examiner and then back and forth between the medical examiner and the DA. Was she frozen? Were these remains at one point frozen? So appears maybe she was in a freezer for a while. There's a lot of things that seem to have possibly gone on with this body for a period of time while Neo was operating, you know, as, you know, it's another Tuesday. The fact that we only have one person so far that seems to have publicly been forced to come forward. Obviously, he was extradited from Montana to go and testify to that grand jury. But we haven't really heard a whole lot from other folks yet. Is that because they're just keeping quiet because they need to under a gag order here? Or are more people keeping quiet because they don't want to face possible charges as well in this for having knowledge of possibly concealing a body or worse?
Well, one of the most interesting witnesses, at least in terms of the amount of time he was on the stand, was the manager. Having testified before the grand jury more times than I can count, I can't imagine being on the grand jury for 3.5 days, I think it was. Mm-hmm. What did he have to say? What all went on there? I think that that's going to be very interesting to see what his testimony is. But nobody's coming forward because they don't want to come forward. They're going to be quiet through this, hope there's a plea bargain and that they never have to come forward.
Yeah. What, any ideas? You know, part of the things that makes it difficult for everyone right now is no cause of death is being listed on as anything. Any theories about why there's delay on that or we're not getting that?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems is the condition of the body. The fact that it was so gravely decomposed. In fact, I don't even know if they've lined out exactly when. You know, that's going to take the forensic entomologist to look at the bugs, because bugs overcome a body. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, you can actually judge by the bugs some of the length of time that the body's been decomposed. So I think it's going to be very difficult for them to tell.
Lots of questions. We're going to get into what happens next here in our next piece. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to join in. David Anthony Burke, known as David, is in a Los Angeles jail as of right now, as of this recording, being held without bail, and the clock is running. The DA's Major Crimes Division has a narrow window to either file formal charges or let him walk. A grand jury heard months of testimony. did not indict. The defense is already telegraphing its strategy. What comes next could define this case or could completely blow all of it apart. David's defense says he was, and this is interesting, the terminology I think is key. He was not the cause of Celeste's death. Not that he wasn't involved, not that he didn't know her. They denied causing her death specifically. I want to start there. What is that statement designed to do? Not necessarily recognizing anything about what happened after, but just so much so that not the cause of the death. Is that strategic in the way that they're putting that out there?
It is very interesting.
Yeah. There she is. Sorry. I want to make sure you're still there, Jen.
Yeah, I'm going audio for a moment.
Okay.
You sound good.
You know, so yes, I think that could be strategic. Look, it's interesting. What are they exactly going to charge? He's being held under suspicion of murder, but that tells me that they're going to charge him with murder. I don't know what they have, but I think it is interesting that it's ambiguous right now, but I think when you see the complaint, it's actually going to be murder. And then, of course, the other desecration of a body and hiding a body and all of that.
Yeah, I would have thought, you know, at the very least, they'll be able to get him on that because it's his car knowledge. I think they'll have an easier time proving his knowledge of it rather than potentially murder. So I think, does it sound like they're probably keeping all their options open on it, Jen?
Yeah, I think so. They don't want to get anything out there that isn't going to be dialed down on what they're going to actually charge with. Again, they can always charge the easier charges.
Yeah.
And then what we call supersede with additional charges. And we might see that here since they did this so quickly.
That's what I'm wondering about. Are they going in strong with this, with a murder charge, and then thinking, well, it might get lowered down here as time progresses and we're able to work through all of the details. You know, is that the strategy? Get him on something really strong initially so they can detain him and keep him versus if they went at with him with a lesser charge or there might be a stronger possibility of getting bail or bonding out of some sort and then the possibility of the risk of flight?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Look, they did the same thing. I don't know if you remember this with Brian Laundrie, even though they didn't have him in their grasp. Yeah. You know, the credit card fraud. We love to do that, right? You get them on something that can stick, and then you supersede with the bigger stuff. I still think this will be ultimately indicted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what are you thinking about the probability of then, again, just saying he gets indicted, that it's going to be pled out? And also, I'm going to do the worst thing is ask two questions at the same time. I'm so curious about when we might see some other potential charges or indictments about towards other people involved.
I think we lost her.
I floored her with my question.
Yep. Yep. There we go.
So, Tony, what do you think about that?
Give me the question one more time. Rephrase it again for me.
So the second part of that is how long do you think it's going to be really before they start charging some other people? So I really want to focus on that, too, because I think there's other people involved. Because when you look at the stats, you look at the averages, you look at how these types of crimes are committed with people that are underage, they don't really have a life arc of committing these things, it's going to be involved. Oh, there she is. Is she back?
I think she's back. Yeah, I wonder. I do wonder about how long it's going to be, but if other people are going to be charged, how long it's going to take, or how many people are they getting to flip? Are they getting to become state's witnesses, like possibly Neil Langston, who was initially arrested, you know, taken from Montana down to California? He's been released now, and he's made his own statements. I'm wondering how many of those they're going for, not necessarily to arrest and put other people behind bars, but to go to what they believe is the source of this, the real reason that they may believe she is no longer around. But I wonder how much of that is a guessing game as to why she is no longer around. How much of that piece of this puzzle we just don't know the answer to, and investigators don't know the answer to, other than these are the pieces that were on the board at the time, so we better, you know, gather these ones up and figure out what's happening before we move any further. Jen, what are you thinking? How long until others may be arrested, if at all?
Well, I think the biggest thing that we're not really talking about is the digital environment that he worked in. He actually said he doesn't have any friends. His whole life is on screen. That's how he made friends. That's how he cultivated his music. That's how he got millions of followers. He talks all about that. I'm wondering what's happening behind the scenes with the digital forensics and what they're determining with that. I think that's going to help figure out who else may be complicit in this and what actually happened, you know, what they planned and what they did. I know that we talked about this before, Tony, about could this just be literally a situation where it was an accident? It was just a drug-fueled night and something happened badly. I don't think it's that. I think it was something more sinister.
Do you really? Like what? What? Because again, I'm on the, you know me, I always go the least route of least resistance when it comes to those things. I was thinking it was an accidental type of thing. When you just look at the type of background, but at the same time, though, open to all possibilities, what makes you think it was more sinister?
I think it was more sinister when you look at some of the, and I know we have to be careful here because art doesn't always imitate life, but it often does. Yeah. And I think you just have to look at some of the sinisterness of the art he created and then combine that with what we understand was in his place after the police left that LAPD didn't collect, like the burn machine and horribly sinister. The situation her body was in. Now, we all know that most people mutilate bodies because they need to hide them, not because they're enjoying it.
Right.
But we don't know here. I mean, it could be that he was. And there is a certain culture that exists in certain, you know, let's see, how do I want to say this? There's a certain culture that exists within certain folks that subscribe to some really dark stuff. And we just don't know if that could be at play here. But judging by some of the stuff that was found in the apartment, that's what concerns me.
I agree with you definitely on the digital side. I think we're going to learn a lot from that because whether it's sinister, I don't think it was a lot of premeditation necessarily, or at least really good experience with premeditation. So I think there's going to be a lot of leakage across all their platforms on the, whether it's from David himself or his entourage, I think there's going to be a lot on that digital.
Suspicion of murder is what he's been arrested on. We don't have official charges as of this recording. Do you think we're going to see additional charges brought on here? Anything involving the age difference between the two of them? We don't know that there was any sort of S relationship going on. I don't know if that can be shown or proven or anything of that nature. But I wonder if are we going to see anything like that tacked on here come Monday when the 48 hours runs up and charges either get brought or he gets released.
Well, I think that unless they have digital proof that they were involved in an intimate way, I don't think we're going to see any charges along those lines.
No.
They're going to have to prove that with photos, videos. It can't just be what people saw. They saw them kissing. I mean, obviously, it seems pretty likely with the shh tattoo on their fingers matching each other and the intimacy that we saw in videos that they were involved. But unless there's, you know, the intimate is recorded, I don't think we're going to see those charges.
I agree. I mean, we're seeing the hard time they have with FLDS and IBLP and all these cults, the hard time they had to prove the underage S that was going on just because no one would come forward. And if you don't have a victim coming forward saying exactly what happened and sometimes even greater proof than that, it's going to be a hard thing to press. So unless they have some sort of digital footprint, and who knows, maybe she texted friends, maybe she texted her mother about what was going on, but doubtful.
I want to throw this out there because I don't think there really has been much attention onto it, and I'm not trying to be a heartless ass, but I want to look at the family of Celeste Rivas Hernandez. I know, you know, they lost a daughter. That's obviously horrible, but I'm wondering, why was she running away all the time? What's going on at home? Because I don't think we've had this conversation. I don't think anybody's really gone down this road very much. And I'm not accusing them of anything. I don't know what was going on. But usually, if you have a child that's running away constantly and they're being reported missing here and there or optionally, because it seems sometimes she was reported, sometimes she was not. The girl was like a seventh grader. I have a seventh grader. I'm trying to like picture this in my mind as a parent just being so kind of aloof or I don't know what the word is for what the hell was going on here in terms of parenting and parental authority or control or ability over her. That to me, there's other kids in that house that still exist. She had siblings. Why is nobody looking over there? And I'm not in any way insinuating that they had anything to do with her death, but I am questioning, why was she running away so often? And yes, that does happen. Sometimes you get kids, they're going to do that. But I don't know. That just seems to be a rather large red flag that because they are, as well, victims here, they lost their daughter, that this seems to be being glossed over a little bit. Am I crazy for thinking this?
Well, a couple of thoughts. They were first generation LSALs.
Sure.
And I can tell you, you know, that is when they came here, first of all, you have parents that are likely both working constantly. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for sure. I'm just saying in my experience with them, if you look at Marasava Trucha, which is the MS-13, the reason they had to start was because they were being so horribly victimized by the already the Mexican gangs that already existed. So you're now in a poor area and you're amongst other people who they have no parental supervision.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard that recording. It's really eerie. It's Celeste screaming at a neighbor.
Yeah.
And Celeste, and she sounds like she's 25, not like she's, you know, she was 14 at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just see, I mean, how she uses language and, you know, profanity and how she talks, the lack of sort of respect, all of that. And again, I'm not victim shaming. I'm strictly saying facts about an environment where kids grow up really fast.
Sure. Yeah.
Boundaries, 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 whether it's by design or by default, you know, a lack of boundaries by whatever reason is what keeps coming up in all these cases. And when you don't have boundaries, and again, parents struggling coming from a foreign country and trying to make ends meet, sure. But at the same time, though, no boundaries means that there's chaos afoot and bad things happen.
I mean, struggling and all that, I understand. But the same, but you got to be a parent too. I don't care where you've come from or what you do. Like, you got kids, and if there's still other kids here, and this is a red flag that a child is continuously running away from a specific home and finding it better, finding life to be better with a stranger celebrity that's almost twice her age. It's rather bizarre, and I would think would demand some sort of investigation. But again, I mean, if unfortunately, we look at so many cases like this and go, well, you know, the culture in that specific group right here, right now, it is kind of chaotic. It's kind of this is great. Can we fix it? Can we, you know, can we help these community or this family or people? So we don't have children growing up in an atmosphere like this where it's conducive for her to feel like this was the best option for her and end up dead.
Well, you're not going to get much from, I would think, and I'm curious what Jen thinks about it, you're not going to get much from the parents on the investigation anyway, because it's not illegal not to have boundaries.
True. And there's no...
So it's interesting. And how would that compare to, like, the parents being accountable for the school shooter? But she's not the perpetrator. Yeah. She's the victim. So, I mean, you can't... Anyway,
my concern would be for the remaining living children in that home and what kind of environment inspired her to run away. What are they growing up in? And maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's fine. Maybe there's absolutely nothing. Maybe it's great. But if you have a kid running away like this, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to guess maybe not the best environment. Just call me crazy. I don't know. But it feels like something that is, you know, a lost piece of this story. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We would love for you to weigh in. Let's hit one other case here while we are talking about it. I don't have the graphic ready, but I will in a moment. Nancy Guthrie and the Bitcoin. Fresh ransom notes have been hitting TMZ recently. One Bitcoin demanded, half for information, half after the arrest. $1.2 million reward through legitimate channels has also moved absolutely nothing. Still no name suspect. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining myself and Robin Drake to break down some of the latest here. I know you had a conversation earlier this week on your channel over on Break the Case about the Bitcoin, about being able to trace Bitcoin ransoms, on how they work, how they function. Can this be done? As a layperson over here, we've seen it in the past. We've seen Colonial Pipeline, Caesars. They've been able to track this sort of thing to a degree in real time when they've had ransom demands on their systems and figure out, okay, we pay the ransom. They track down who did it and they get their money back. It's probably far more complex and not as easy as that. But Jen, what have you found out in your research and your conversations that you've had about these Bitcoin demands and just how difficult they may be to track down or not? And I think
we just lost her again. Just
oh
then,
no,
because she asked the question
because she is like Guthrie Queen.
Yes,
she's doing a lot of work on this stuff. The tracking through the Bitcoin and poking at the system is what she's really been pressing,
yeah.
Pressing the sheriff, pressing the system, pressing. And it's why it's so it's confusing. That's why, you know, hopefully she can come back and comment on this, because, you know, and she said this in her last show, when you have the ability to do something, because the Bureau has resources, the Guthries have resources, and even said online and in social media that they're willing to pay for information just to get their mother back, and really in any kind of condition, why wouldn't you take a swing at it? And that's what I'm kind of curious about, especially when you have the ability to do some sort of tracking. And even, and again, you just play the law of averages. So say you lose it. Mm-hmm. It's still intelligence you get. You know, we would invest in the Bureau a lot of time, a lot of energy, and do a cost-benefit analysis of the money we're going to invest in this for the intelligence we're going to get out of it. So I'm curious why they're not as well. Maybe they know something we don't know. Doubtful.
Well, I mean, I'm not super well-versed in how Bitcoin works. I have very little of it in my investment portfolio, and I've never bought a damn thing in the world with it. I know there's ways that you can do that, but is it really that untraceable? Is it? I mean, I know there have been ways where it has been traced, and I guess to a layperson, that's the question that I think a lot of us have, is like, well, if you can kind of trace it over here in some possible factions, why can't you over here in this? If you have, and not just the average Joe doing it, the full force of the United States government and their ability to track something like this, is it really that impossible to do? And is simply the fear of losing $36,000 all that's holding anyone back from pulling that lever, I guess?
And that's what's interesting to me, Tony, because okay, so what I do when I do the calculations when I'm in the world of intelligence is, let's just write off the fact that we're going to lose it. We're going to lose track of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, all right, so if we write that off, if you're going for the intelligence, if you can actually garner some sort of intelligence on where she might be, why wouldn't you take a swing at that? So I would actually go for the end result, hoping you might get – so I, in other words – we're kind of talking about plan A would be to track the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And plan B is to find Nancy. Now, I'm reversing it. Plan B is to figure track the Bitcoins. I think that's harder than trying to center on, all right, let's get some actionable intel, because as of what we know in the public right now, we have zero.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it garners another response, even if it gets someone to poke their head up somewhere, it's one more thing we have to track down, unless for some reason they are inundated with a lot more leads than we know about right now, because I think there's not much they're working with.
You know, that's what I guess I'm wondering about is, you know, we're hearing a handful of stories of, okay, there's a Bitcoin demand here over at TMZ. There's a Bitcoin demand over here at whatever. We're just hearing about a couple of them. When somebody knows that this is kind of the modality that are being demand, the demands are coming from in a case like this, you're going to get your copycats and you're going to get everybody from some, you know, Yahoo on their computer in their mother's basement doing this, you know, all the way to maybe the actual person who has true information. How do you know who has what? You can't go pay every Bitcoin wallet $36,000 and hope for the best. And then how do you truly decipher who has information when that individual, even if they may have the information, doesn't have anything to prove to you that they are that much closer to the actual facts than anybody else?
That's what makes this so challenging, stupid to me.
Yeah.
Because, all right, so if we go back to, I know there's two main leading theories out there. Basically, the main thrust is the house was, something in the house was targeted. She was abducted from the house for either panic escalation because you're going for something else in a house and she dies along the way, or you went into the house to get her. But either way, you're trying to profit from someone in that, from something in that house, either her herself or something else, or I'm sorry, the third theory is just to terrorize Savannah by making it personal. Okay, so with that in place, I'm still thinking that I still from the get-go, and this is why, that's why I love having Jennifer on, because, you know, we have all these different theories about what could be, and she is all in on, you know, it was targeted for Nancy and that these ransom notes are real. I'm bought in if that's the truth. But here's a challenge with it. If it was the truth, why aren't they pulling the trigger and doing it? Unless you go on to the other side of the coin, where I'm at on the ransom note side, was I think the ransom notes were frauds.
Yeah.
Some of them, I'd say, because I know there's some things going on with some of the notes with some religious overtones maybe, and they might be. In other words, we got a lot of notes, and so to your point, which one do you respond to? And I think some of them are very indeed coming from the Prince of Algeria, looking for your $1 billion, and all you got to do is give him $500 million first.
Well, it's interesting, you know, if some of them carry, and this is just pure speculation here, so whoever's going to run with this as a story, understand that. If there is a pattern here of religiosity in some specific notes that kind of track of like, okay, these notes seem to come together, like these might be from a similar group, that still doesn't mean it's from the kidnapper. It just means it's from someone who's consistently sending in the same level of madness. And there is a theory that's gaining some traction right now that some of the notes contain, or may contain, I should say, scripture. And that the person behind them may see themselves as holy, someone who gets off on control, not money. That would explain why the family's public appeals have landed so heavily on religious language. And it would explain why the Bitcoin wallet has sat empty for weeks. If the money was never the point, how long is somebody like that willing to hold on? And does that change the window the Bureau is actually working inside? But if money's not the thing and it's all religious, why would that person be writing letters demanding Bitcoin? I guess it almost contradicts itself in the same way. But if we were to take the Bitcoin out of it, and because some of these notes, I believe, just had messages, didn't have a Bitcoin connection to it, just religiosity in them, allegedly. And if this is about control and it's not about money, and it's more so about watching the Today Show and then leaking some information out to somebody, and suddenly, oh, look, Savannah's not on that interview anymore. She suddenly was pulled away live on television. I mean, there's a level of control there that some asshole may be sitting somewhere going, I made that happen. People get off on weird shit. And if they can see them having a level of control of doing something like that, pulling a live television lever from wherever they're at, or then pulling the lever of emotions with this family and their tweets and their responses that they put out online, they're getting a reaction. They're able to connect directly with that celebrity that otherwise has gatekeepers in front of them, but they're able to do it because they did something so extreme. Sometimes it's just for the joy of that. And that's the sick, scary part. And that's the part where we may never actually find out who the hell did this, if that's the goal.
I totally get that and see it as a possibility. And just like all the other theories, though, all right, so let's go down that road, mm-hmm. then why isn't there more? So if you have a message of religiosity, or if you mm-hmm. have some doctrine, if you have some poking you want to do, or you have some control you're trying to exercise, we're seeing a little bit of it, but there's so much more they could do if that was the end goal. Why? In other words, if you have a message inside of the ransom notes or the notes that you're sending to TMZ, they're not getting aired. So if there's a message in there you want to be aired, why wouldn't you find another outlet that would air the entire thing or another way to put it out there? So, okay.
No, I think they are. I think they're attempting that right now.
Right, but I know. So, but it's the tempo that I'm not getting on this one, because people that are trying to gauge and control an action or control things tend to want to have a higher tempo, a return of their investment, of taking risk. And but it's not quite all the way there is what I'm saying.
But I think there's also, I think we might almost be overthinking it a little bit too.
I think so.
We're thinking that there's some sort of end goal here, that it is to get Savannah to do something or to get money or to get whatever. It might just be somebody with some sort of extreme delusional religiosity going on that really enjoys poking animals with sticks. I mean, when you're at the zoo and you're looking at, not that you're poking animals with sticks at a zoo, but let's for a second, for the sake of argument, say that you're poking an animal with a stick at a zoo. Let's say you're five and have that sort of mentality. You're not sitting there going, I'm going to poke the animal with a stick, with any sort of greater goal of like, I hope it sleeps well tonight, or I hope it goes, eats more food. No, you're just going for the reaction at that moment. And then you walk away to the next exhibit because your brain is just firing every which way and you're a kid. I'm wondering if that's kind of what's going on here. There isn't a greater goal. There's not a greater good. There's not a greater goal. There's nothing. It's some asshole that is delusional as hell, thinks that they're communicating with, that somehow communicating and moving people in some way, shape, or form by poking his family with a stick is somehow, it's fulfilling to them. And that's all they need. They're getting fulfilled by something. Not that there's a greater goal, but they're whatever they're hungry for, they're getting fed it.
So I like the thought process, Tony. So the intent I was speaking about earlier was the intent was to profit by something in that house. But we keep seeing incongruencies between that intent and actions, which keep not adding up. That's why you said we're overcomplicating it when we're doing that. So if the intent wasn't to make profit off of Nancy, because that went sideways, if the intent wasn't to profit off of taking something of material value out of the house, because that went sideways, mm-hmm. what was the intent? Well, according to your theory, the intent is just to keep poking the bear forever. Which now, and so here's a great analogy for that. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, he had an intent in a manifesto of trying to get rid of technology in the world by blowing people up. But his intent was never to stop. His intent was to get better at it and just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interesting, because remember, always trying, it's never motive, as John Douglas talks about. Motive is something that we like to say in the press and the media and all that, but it's always about understanding. That's why I keep coming back to that word intent. And every time we're dealing with this Guthrie case, we can't quite keep lining the intent that we think it is up with the actions we're seeing. Yeah. But your theory out there, actually it lines up better than anything else I've heard so far. And I think Coffendeffer's, you know, Jen's great work on that poking at Nancy is definitely a huge answer and supporting that intent of the eternal purgatory they're trying to put the family in, because that could be a never-ending, without an end state of something that we're looking at, material gain, Bitcoin gain. That's why it's not gaining traction. It's just one way to keep that attention and poke it.
Very I mean, I'm wondering if the true person who's behind this has anything to do still with any of these ransom notes, or if it's someone who just saw an opportunity to start playing that role and to be taken as seriously as if they were this, and they're doing it. I mean, there's the simplistic, innocent, childhood version of it where it's a prank call, you know, and as a kid, you laugh at it and you get some excitement out of it. Somebody believed that this was crazy. I used to prank the competing radio station across town with fake cancellations when there were storms. Now, Todd's
laughing. You've got Todd going.
Tony.
I would be like, the R Lady of Basted Chicken is, or the R Lady of Eternal Damnation is canceling their Basted Chicken roast today because of the storm. Okay, we'll get that on. And then they would air it. And I got extreme joy. It was funny. But that was innocent and stupid. This is someone's life. This is someone's mother. This is someone's well-being. This is someone's very existence. But I'm not saying that those same sort of levers or that same sort of fucked up enjoyment that you get from making a thing like that couldn't also be bastardized in someone's brain and be so cognitively distorted that there's people getting their jollies out of this sort of shit too.
Tony, I think out of everything we've covered so far, this makes the most sense to me, believe it or not, because if you wanted to, I mean, because this person's got away with this.
Yeah.
And the reason why most people get caught is because they're trying to profit. The intent is to profit in some way. And the attempt to profit is what always trips them up. But if you're not trying to profit, you're just trying to poke. You control the tempo of when you want to poke. And since it doesn't, this makes so much sense. It's all falling in place. They were never looking for two-way communication. Remember, it's always one way. And anytime you do, and so let's just assume all the ransom notes are accurate or real, which I don't think. But the original ones that came in, which they think were, at least that's what Nancy, Savannah said, and some others have said, I think even Jen maybe, none of them actually gave away for two-way communication, which hasn't happened. And so remember, I keep going back to the stats saying, well, that can't be that because the stats say every single case, there's got to be two-way communication, but this one wasn't. And so what fits to no two-way communication needed? The poke. Without the need for profit, they just want to get the attention to keep poking.
Some people just like the poke.
It's very interesting. I'm going to re-examine a few things on this one. Yeah. And what I love about it, too, it totally supports what Jen's been saying the entire time about retribution towards Savannah or the family in some way. Yes-ish. I think it might have been personal towards them, but it definitely created an opportunity for someone that was public, who's someone's mother, who they knew where they lived. In other words, it might have been targeted towards them or it might have just been target of opportunity for them for this need they had in their lives to have celebrity notoriety is a huge reason why a lot of morons do stupid things. Yep. And this is, I mean, look at the celebrity notoriety they're getting out of this. They're, like you said, they're controlling a narrative at their tempo. All they have to do to get attention is put a little more trickle out there and it doesn't require two-way communication, which keeps them safe.
And that person may or may not have anything to do with Nancy. It may just be somebody who found a lever and is getting some joy out of doing this.
Right. It might not have been the first one. It could have been someone who came along and just riding the coattails.
Two totally different crimes being committed, in my opinion. I don't
know. Torture is what it is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's somebody who gets joy. It's a very sadistic type thinking. I mean, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. Check it out. This is Robin's latest book. It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books. Go check it out. Jennifer Coffendaffer, check out her channel on YouTube and on Substack, Break the Case. And you can hear that conversation that she had recently with an expert about Bitcoin. And it's like an hour and a half. It really dives deep. So I do highly recommend checking that out if you're trying to get full context.
Including the video for David and getting in the trial. I mean, looking at Jennifer's stuff before you listen to our show is always a great move, just like Bob Mata.
Yeah, go check it out. All right. We'll continue our conversation in the comments section. Until then, and until next time, for Jen, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.